In our first lesson, we considered the life of Solomon as an example of one who sought to live a life without God. And that was, of course, God being the center of his life. We saw that when all was said and done, that he declared, "Indeed, all was vanity and grasping at the wind. For there was no profit under the sun," Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 11. We'd like to pick up where we left off on that study by reading in your hearing from Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 12 through 14. Ecclesiastes 12 through 14. Get this correct here, one way or the other. We begin. "Then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly, for what can the man do who succeeds the king? Only what he has already done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceive that the same event happens to them all." Now, in this, Solomon is seeing that the pursuit of earthly pleasures is foolishness, and that those who turn from God to follow after such things are indeed like a fool walking in darkness. But take note of the last statement here. Look at what we have. "Yet I myself perceive that the same event happens to them all." In a sense, he could see that even for the wise man, it was not any different than it was for a fool in the final analysis. Notice with me, if you will, please, Ecclesiastes 15 and 16. That's chapter 2, verses 15 and 16. "So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? And I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As a fool." Notice all. Both wise and foolish will die. So even being wise is vanity and empty and vain. He then goes on to speak about the fruits of all your efforts. In Ecclesiastes 2, now verses 18 and 19. "Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to a man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled, and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity." You know, the realization that one day you're going to have to part with all the fruits of your hard work, and there's no guarantee that they will fall into the right hands, causes many people to worry, especially in the twilight years of their life. Oh, some create trusts and some appoint executors of their estates to be sure that everything will be done the way they want it. But what if these people prove unwise? Or what if they die? The fact is, when we die, we must leave it all behind. Luke chapter 12 and verse 20. Jesus is in telling the parable here of the rich man, and he says that God said to him, "You fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will these things be which you have provided?" Your prized possessions being squandered, unappreciated, in fact, being sold in a garage sale. That's what you have to look forward to. In Ecclesiastes, the second chapter again, and now verse 21, there is a man whose labor is with wisdom and knowledge and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. When you're gone, who knows who's going to have it? Probably the IRS will have the better portion of it. But there again, somebody will have it who didn't labor for it. All is vanity. But next, we want to follow along here now. Next, Solomon turns his attention in Ecclesiastes 4 to injustice in this life. In the fourth chapter and verse 1, I returned and considered the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, but they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors, there is power, but they have no comforter. You know, whenever you rule out God, whenever you leave God out of the picture, there's no hope for the oppressed. And there's no penalty for the oppressors. For those that say, well, you can always do something about it. No, the power is with the oppressors. That's the hard, cold facts. But again, he also considers the rat race. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 4, and this time we're looking at the New American Standard Version of this. He says, "And I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is a result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor." Now the New King James of this says, "Again, I saw that for toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This too is vanity and grasping for the wind." Those who enjoy success because of their skill in designing a product or maybe whatever, you know, something that distinguishes them from others, will eventually cause them to be the object of envy for those who envy what they're doing. And sooner or later, someone will come along and outdo them, and the result of their labors will be vanity. In the rat race, there are indeed some dropouts. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 5. "The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh." Folds his hands here is instead of working with them. He consumes his own flesh. He brings ruin upon himself. One commentator said his idleness eats away not only what he has, but what he is. eroding his self-control, his grasp of reality, his capacity for care, and in the end, his self-respect. Also in the rat race, we find the miser. Ecclesiastes 4, verses 7 and 8. Then I returned, and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone without a companion. He has neither son nor brother, yet there is no end to his labors, nor is his eye satisfied with riches. But he never asked, for whom do I toil and deprive myself of good? This also is vanity and a grave misfortune. Notice, he is alone, meaning he has no dependents. He is not working to support a family or to share with friends or even to send kids to college. Yet he has an obsession with wealth. He never stops to think about who all this wealth is for. And the worst part is he's never satisfied with what he has. This also is vanity and a grave misfortune. But next we find Solomon looking at human popularity. This time we go to Ecclesiastes 4, verse 13. Ecclesiastes 4, 13 through 16. Better is a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who will be admonished no more. For one comes out of prison to be king, although he was born poor in his kingdom. I saw all the living who walk under the sun. They were with the second youth who stands in his place. There was no end to all the people over whom he was made king. Yet those who come afterward will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and grasping for the wind. The young king, he says, will go the way of the old king, and not necessarily even for his faults, but simply as time and familiarity and the restlessness of men make him no longer interesting. He has reached his pinnacle of human glory, only to be stranded there. One generation is pictured as praising him and thronging by his side, and the next asks, who is he? I think we have seen this especially as among singers and musicians. One generation throngs, praises, just thinks they're wonderful. The next generation looks back and says, who are they? Surely, this also is vanity and grasping for the wind. But then he turns his attention back to the subject of materialism. And in Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 10, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. A man is not nourished or satisfied by material things, for the love of money grows by what it feeds on. The more you have, the more you want. If anything is worse than the addiction that money brings, it's the emptiness that money leaves. But wealth has some built-in problems. He recognized this in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 11. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. you know, the rich man said, there's a complex establishment that somehow grows with wealth. As one's wealth increases, likewise the number of people whom you must maintain to look after your investments. Accountants, managers, lawyers, maids, cooks, gardeners, drivers, mechanics, on and on and on and on. By having this abundance, I gain merely this, that I have to guard more, to distribute more among others, and to have the trouble of taking care of more. What he's really saying is this, more wealth means bigger bills. But what happens whenever you become obsessed with it? It becomes something you just cannot stop wanting and attaining. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5, in the second part of verse 11, Solomon said, so what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? The only real advantage of having more wealth is to be able to say, look what I've got. That belongs to me. And I can look at it anytime I want to. That's it. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 12. He says, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or whether he eats much. But the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. This really demonstrates that people do become servants or slaves of their possessions. The rich man's full stomach and full house, as far as possessions goes, doesn't permit him to rest comfortably. What's the use of being wealthy enough to eat all you want and what you want and when you want if you can't sleep? If it deprives you of real enjoyment. One commentator wrote this is one discomfort that the laboring man is spared. We offer an unconscious comment on it by our modern exercise machines and health clubs, for it is one of our human absurdities to pour out money and effort just to undo the damage of money and ease. Well put. But of course, there is, as we all know, the uncertainty of wealth. All we have to do is look at what's happened to our economy. So often in our lifetime, we have seen a virtual crash of the economy. But Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 13 says, there is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun. Riches kept for their owner to his hurt. Now, the New American Standard Version here says being hoarded. Now, the hurt is seen in the next verse, verse 14. There it is. In verse 14, those riches perish through misfortune. He begets a son, and there is nothing in his hand. The point is that the love of wealth makes people miserable whenever they have it and when they lose it. In verse 15 of Ecclesiastes 5, he said that he came from his mother's womb naked, and there he shall return. And of course, to go as he came. Now listen, and he shall take nothing from his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. This is really similar to what Job had to say in Job 1 and verse 21, when he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Once again, we're reminded, death is the end of all material wealth. But Solomon also considers the vanity of morality without God. He says in chapter 7 and verse 15 of Ecclesiastes, "I have seen all things in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness." Now, to perish here is in contrast with, to perish here is in contrast with the idea of prolonging life. Perish versus prolonging of life. Thus, a righteous man dies and an evil man lives. Now, what about that? Well, that's what happens in this life. Solomon also considers in Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 10. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 10. There it is. "When I saw the wicked buried," this is a note that he takes of this. "Then I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had done so. This also is vanity." What's the use of being a nice guy if you die for it? But without God, being nice has no reward. One of the most perplexing problems, One of the most perplexing problems to observe of the wicked going to their graves, praised by the society whom they themselves have maligned, is that this shows popular opinion and popular moral judgments can be totally wrong. They are swayed by the evidence of success or failure. The dictator or the corrupt tycoon may have bent the rules, and it will be said, "But after all, they got things done. They had flair. They lived in style." But Solomon observed in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 3, "This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. Truly, the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that, they go to the dead." "Oh, you see, the boss's kid got a raise, and I didn't." Well, so what? Or, "Well, it's not who you know, but who, but, it's not what you know, but who you know." Get that right? You know, that people think this, and unfortunately, they're just feeling sorry for themselves. This is the way that it is. This is the way life goes. Now, we want to get down to the conclusion. And I'm going to take the comments of one of the commentators, and then I'm going to make some comments on it. The writer has pulled no punches. He has presented a hard, cold, and true picture of life under the sun. He has undermined all the confidence that men have in this life and the things of this life. To show their utter futility, meaningless, dissatisfaction apart from God. You have seen the utter vanity of all earthly things and pursuits. We have been faced with the appalling inference that nothing has meaning and nothing matters under the sun. It is where then we can hear the good news, which says everything matters. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Notice that. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. Now, why did he say this? For, now that's put in there to refer back to what he just said. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it is good or whether it is evil. Now, I want you to think about that. There is, in fact, a time of judgment that is ahead. And even secret things that we do or have done, whether they are good or evil, they are going to be brought into judgment. Therefore, man needs more than just a life and view of life under the sun. What is it that gives meaning and fulfillment? Well, the only thing that really gives meaning and fulfillment is the knowledge that God is. Solomon said the whole duty of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. This is what man was created for. This is man's purpose. This is where man finds real meaning to life. Well, why should man ever do this? Well, you saw it. God is going to bring every work into judgment. With God in the picture, everything does matter. Why? Because everything matters to God. Everything has meaning. Everything has purpose. Everything has relevance. Well, why? Why? Because our eternal destiny will be determined by it. Well, what can man do? Well, the question is the same we asked this morning. Is God truly the center of your life? If not, everything you do is vanity and grasping for the wind. Why not put God where he belongs? Put him at the top of your list of priorities. Not just put him on your list, put him at the top of it. Every decision, every thought that you have, everything that you do in your life needs to be with a consideration for the God to whom you will have to give an account someday. And if he's at the top of your list of priorities, you will make serving him the most important thing in your life. You will serve him on a daily basis. You will worship him with the collective known as the church or the body of Christ on a regular basis. Because why? He is at the top of your list of priorities. And you say, oh, well, I got so many things going on. I got this and I got that and I got, let me tell you something. You put God where he belongs. You put God at the top of your list of priorities. You make serving him the most important thing in your life, and everything else will fall into place. Every single thing else. Why? Because they will dwindle in their importance. Things that seem so important to me right now, no, those are relatively of unimportance. Only thing that is important to me is serving God and doing so acceptably. I want you to think seriously about this. I think that there's a lot to be learned from what the wise man discovered in his search to find meaning in a life without God. It is really vanity. It's nothing. But we can understand what is really important and what it is that pleases our God.